This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Residents in 19 western Wisconsin counties go to the polls Tuesday to elect a congressional representative for Wisconsin's 3rd District, a district that includes the cities of Platteville, La Crosse, and Eau Claire. In this hour, the third and final debate held in recent weeks among the three candidates vying for the seat. Incumbent Ron Kind, a Democrat from La Crosse, Republican challenger Dan Kopanky of La Crosse, and independent candidate Michael Crisine of Holton. The moderator for this debate is UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim. Candidates took questions from those attending the debate, including panelists Chris Hardy of the La Crosse Tribune, John Davis of Wisconsin Public Radio, and Diane Withers of the League of Women Voters. But to begin the conversation, we hear first an opening statement from each of the three candidates, beginning with Dan Kopanky.
This is great. I am thrilled to be on campus. I am thrilled to see this room full. We have a great political process here in this country, and it's all about voter involvement, and that would be you tonight. So welcome. Thank you for being here, and thank you, Chancellor, for hosting. This is a great campus. We're very, very proud of this campus here in La Crosse. I am a UWL grad, and I talk UWL all the time throughout the 3rd District. Even though we have other great campuses, this is my alma mater. A little bit about me is that I was born and raised on a farm not too far from here. Worked in agribusiness for 25 years, selling seed to farmers. Served our country in the military for 7 years, the Marine Corps and the National Guard. And met my wife as a high school sweetheart when I was 16 at Lutheran on Alaska. We've been married 41 years. It's been an awesome experience for me. My wife is sitting right here. You might want to get her side of the story after this debate tonight. We have 4 kids and 11 grandkids. And as most of you know, my wife and I own the La Crosse Loggers, which is a summer collegiate baseball team that plays here at Copeland Park in the Midwest League, or Northwoods League, excuse me. So why am I running for U.S. Congress? Because I have a great business, and I am a state senator. I have great jobs. I'm honored. I'm honored to be representing the 32nd in Madison. Can best be summed up in an experience I had on the campaign trail when I was in a restaurant, and I got done eating, and there was this couple, and I went to say hi to them, and they were guessing in the mid-80s. The first words out of their mouth was, "We're scared." That was the first words out of their mouth. And I thought, "Why? What are you scared of?" And it turned out to be that the massive debt, the jobless rate, what's going to happen for the future generations? And so we talked, and it instilled this desire for me to represent you in Washington. And I have 11 grandkids, as I mentioned. 11 grandkids. What does the future hold for them? That's why I'm running for Congress. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Number two, Ron Kind.
Thank you, Professor Heim. I want to thank the co-sponsors of tonight's event, the panelists, the League of Women Voters, obviously, Chancellor Gowan, the faculty, and the entire student body here at UWL. It's great to be here. And I think we really do face a very simple but fundamental choice on November 2nd this year. It's a decision on whether we continue to move forward and make progress as a nation, or whether we fall back to the failed policies that drove us into this economic ditch to begin with. And I think now more than ever it's important that we have an effective, independent voice standing up for the people back home in western Wisconsin, putting their interests first in Washington, above the political interest and leadership and powerful special interest. I believe I've been that effective, independent voice. In fact, in a recent survey of our voting records in Congress, it was determined that I'm the 5th most independent voter in the entire Congress out of 435. That tells me I'm doing my job and standing up for the people back home first. But the choice is move forward or move backwards. I don't want to move back to the failed policies that drove us into this ditch, policies that my opponents here are advocating even today. Tax breaks to corporations that are outsourcing American jobs overseas, the number one job killer that we have in our economy today, or continued tax breaks to multimillionaires and wealthy Wall Street bankers who just cashed out and borrowing $800 billion from China in order to pay for it, increasing the debt burden of our children and grandchildren, or the complete elimination of Social Security or the privatization of the Social Security program of putting that money and subjecting it to the topsy-turvy whims of the stock market. I think that's wrong, and I will do everything I can to oppose it. But my number one, number two, and number three priority is doing everything we can to get this economy back on track, creating good-paying jobs. That's why I've been talking about my plan about Make It in America First, and also the innovation agenda that our state and nation needs. You can check that out on ronkind.org. But we need this innovation agenda to be the most competitive and innovative nation in the entire world. And that's what's happening here on this campus with the investment in education and the research that's being done. So I want to continue to move forward. I don't want to go back to those failed policies that drove us into the ditch that we're trying to climb out of even today. And I'd appreciate your support and vote on November 2nd. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Mike Racine.
Hi, folks. First, I'd like to thank you again, all, for coming. I appreciate you showing interest, especially in this political climate here. And I'd like to thank the Chancellor for having this event here, League of Women Voters, panelists, and the TV station here, XOW. So thank you very much, for everybody, for doing this.
Oops.
But our nation is in a very precarious spot right now. Not really from threats outside, but mainly from threats inside. The main thing that we have a problem with is the Constitution is not being followed. The Constitution must be followed for this country to work effectively and fairly. Too much power in the hands of too many people, too few people, will produce problems. Lord Acton said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And we know this to be true. Throughout history, know it to be true. But what Mr. Kind, with his Pelosi, Obama, Kind team has done here is we're running in the bad direction. We're running away from the Constitution. They've been setting fires, voting for bailouts, even though Ron says that he's against the bailout, you know, supporting big business and bankers, and he's stood up against them. He's taken their funding. Insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, to the tune of almost $250,000. He hasn't stood up to them. But we also have Mr. Kopanky here. I mean, Mr. Kopanky is, while Mr. Kind is fighting the fires, Mr. Kopanky is trying to put them out with an empty extinguisher. He says that he's for getting regulation down. He says he's for reducing taxation, but he doesn't have any solid things to say that he's going to cut in domestic spending. He's for giving illegals driver's license. If the illegals cross the border, break our laws, come over, steal identities, he's for giving them a way to stay in this country, for amnesty, and that's wrong.
Thank you. We'll go right into the questions. First is Chris Hardy. And this will be directed at, Dan Kopanky.
Me first.
Okay. Both Mr. Kind and Mr. Kopanky have faced ethical accusations during this election. Mr. Kopanky's accusations came over the use of foundation funds to pay off a loan for lights at Copeland Park. Mr. Kind's accusations come from two Eau Claire doctors who claim they were told to come up with campaign cash before meeting with a congressman in 2007. How do these allegations impact Tuesday's election?
Well, first, let me say that in being out here for over a year, people really want to talk about $14.3 trillion debt ceiling. They want to talk about a jobless rate that's hovering at 10%. They want to talk about elected officials that somehow aren't listening to them. There are bigger issues out here. It's unfortunate that these two issues came forward. They have. I'm willing to answer, you know, my part of it. My allegations have come from the other party, Ron Kind's party. It's resting with the Government Accountability Board right now, and we'll see what they do. But look, in the foundation, we put it on an IRS form and send it in. We had two attorneys look at it. If we're trying to hide something here, we certainly wouldn't have sent it into the IRS, and we wouldn't have had two attorneys look at it. So I'm confident that when the GAB, Government Accountability Board, does look at it, they will look favorably.
Thank you, Dan.
Chris, thank you for giving me an opportunity to respond. Those allegations that were recently brought against me are a lie. There's no truth and no basis in them whatsoever. This is a blatant partisan attack to try to attack my credibility, my character, and my integrity. And this is the proverbial political equivalent of the Hail Mary pass in the final days of this campaign season to try to smear a little bit of mud on me. But you know what really makes these allegations outrageous, Senator Kopanky? You didn't even have the courage to come after me and make these allegations. Instead, you're picking on a female staff member of mine up in Eau Claire. And if you knew Janet as I did, she is the most honest, ethical, and decent person that you or I could ever meet in our whole life. And she has denied these allegations that have been raised. And that's unfortunate, because the people really want to hear what issues that we're going to work on in order to get this economy back on track, whether it comes to the economy and everything else. And these last-minute allegations are merely out there to try to cast aspersion on my character and integrity. I take great offense to it, because they are blatant lies. And when they start attacking my staff person as this campaign, it shows me that we've got a candidate and a campaign that's willing to say anything or do anything to get elected. This is a new low of unethical standards, even for you, Senator Kopanky. Not only should you be ashamed of these allegations, but you should pick up the phone tomorrow and apologize to Janet and Eau Claire for even leveling them against her.
Thanks, Ron. Mike?
Well, I forgot to pay my tabs once. No, I think in politics, our politicians should be an example to us. They should be an example for following the Constitution. They should be an example to provide leadership, to provide a guideline for how we want our children to be raised and how we want our children to value our country, just like our servicemen. Growing up, my uncle was a Marine. He was a backseater in an F-4 Phantom. And I remember as a little kid going to pick him up at the airport with my parents. And he came out in his Marine Corps dress. And that was pretty cool. That's the type of role model I think I want my children to look up to me to be, that I'm sticking up for the Constitution, that these people that came over the ocean to settle this land and hack it out of the wilderness, that they should be looked up to too, that we should follow that example, that we don't need to rely on government. Government should not be the first recourse to solve our problems. We should be looking inwardly to solve our own problems together and individually. And that's what I want America to be. I want us to be rugged individuals, but yet helping in our communities. I'm a Christian, and I definitely believe in helping when people are down. But that's where we take government out of it. It needs to be done at a private, personal level, that type of help. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Next question comes from John Davis, WLSU.
What should the federal government's role be in job creation?
It's directed at Ron Kind.
Thank you, John. I think this is the number one issue that our nation is facing today. What can we do working together to get this economy back on track, creating good-paying jobs? And I think the private marketplace is a powerful force out there, but there is an important partnership and role for government to play in support and empowering and providing opportunity to more people. One of the areas that I think we can be doing more of and where I focus is on helping our small businesses and family farmers that are the backbone of our regional economy. I was proud to support the Small Business Tax Relief and Lending Bill that the President just signed into law in order to provide tax breaks to small businesses, accelerated depreciation and immediate expensing, no cap gains, along with a lending program now that local lenders can participate in if they choose in order to get those loans out to small businesses to keep them in business and creating jobs, because they're going to help pull us out of this economic recession. But I was also proud earlier this year to support the Student Financial Aid and Fiscal Responsibility Act. I think it's important that we invest in our children's future, making sure that every student that wants to go on to school has the economic means to do it. We did that with the largest expansion of student financial aid in our nation's history, and I teamed up with my colleague, Republican Representative Tom Petri, in order to get this done. And we did it by completely paying for it, by taking away those taxpayer subsidies going to large banks, offering student loans with 100% federal guarantee. So we have major expansion in the Pell Grant program, index it for inflation, funding for TRIO Gear Up and Upward Bound programs so low-income students can afford to go to school. Because the number one determinant of how successful an economy is the number of people holding BA degrees walking around in that society. That's what's being done here on campus, and that's what I'm committed to continue throughout Western Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Mike?
Well, I think our jobs are being sent overseas because it's profitable for our companies to do that. That's one reason We need to make it unprofitable for them to do that. That means when they manufacture something overseas and they sell it overseas and they take the funds and they put it in their bank account overseas, we need to be able to tax that or greatly reduce the tax rate for them to be encouraged to repatriate those funds. That worked before, and it was a beautiful way to get revenues up. But more importantly, a lot of our problems are because, again, we're not following the Constitution. We're not following the Constitution. I've got a four-phase plan to get our problem under control here. Downsize the government 80% to what it is right now, and it can be done, folks. Phase one is to compare all the bureaucratic departments to the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. What doesn't conform to the Constitution gets thrown out. That eliminates a lot of bureaucracy. We need to eliminate, or we need to trim others. This together will save $1.3 trillion per year. The regulation reduction that comes with that, more businesses will be less intimidated to do business. Budget deficit goes away as unemployment goes down and in revenues to the government increase. People get out of unemployment and welfare. Phase two is with the Social Security Fund, we start using those savings and pay into the Social Security Fund. And we start cashing out. I'm talking $200,000 as we save, $200,000 per retiree to cash out. And that'll be about $7 trillion. But with the savings, we can do it. And I hope to expand on my plan further. There's two other phases.
Thanks, Mike. Next question comes from Dustin Nuki.
Oh, wait. Dan has.
Oh, I'm sorry. Response. Dan.
Sorry, Dan.
So what should the government do? Well, for 234 years, we're a great company because we have a great private sector where we have long-term sustainable jobs, where we are able to get enough money to protect our borders and have a strong defense, which is what the Constitution says we're supposed to do. But lately, this government has got into the auto business, got into the financial sector, wants to control our health sector. That's what this government wants to do. And with all of those pieces of legislation and policies that have come down from this administration, we have created a paralyzed nation. Businesses are sitting on $2 trillion. Exactly 27% more than they were just a couple years ago. Households are sitting on $8 trillion. And they're sitting on this because they don't know what's next coming down from Washington. And they cite the financial reform bill. Businesses trying to figure out, how is this going to affect me? And am I going to be able to receive some credit so I can grow my business and add jobs? And they talk about Obamacare, a tax increase. It's going to cost. Business already downsizing because of it or not growing. And they talk about cap and trade, which Ron Kind voted for. It's a job killer in the Midwest because we rely on coal. And then the 0103 tax cuts, which this administration, this Congress left town without addressing, leaving us in the lurch out here as to what kind of tax rate are we going to face in the coming years. That's what government can do to create jobs. Downsizing, get out of the way.
Thanks. Next question comes from Diane Withers, League of Women Voters.
Should Congress create a path to citizenship for the large number of unauthorized immigrants currently living in the United States? And if so, how?
Okay, this directed at Dan Kopanke.
We do not have an immigration policy in this country because 14 years we haven't had any kind of a policy, any program coming down from the federal government. There's been no backbone, none. President Bush wanted to bring something forward. He was sabotaged. Nothing. So we need people that go to Washington and have backbone to stand up to this issue and bring forth policy that works. We haven't had the will to do it so far, Congressman. And so what are we going to do? We need to control the borders. Control the borders. We haven't done that. And when Arizona tried to do it, because the federal government was shirking their responsibilities, they came down on Arizona for trying to control their own borders. Wow. So we need to control our own borders, whether it be through electronics, through people, through fences, whatever it takes. We need to control our borders. It's one of the responsibilities of our U.S. government. Secondly, we need to identify who these people are that are here. Yeah, I was, as Mike said, in favor of this driver's license, where we would at least identify who these people were. That's the second thing that we need to do, identify them. We don't know who they are right now. That would have helped. And number three, we certainly should not have taxpayers' dollars, hard-earned taxpayers' dollars. People are hurting in Wisconsin, in this country, go for benefits for people that are here illegally. So we do those three things, and then we go from there. My time's up. I'm sorry. I'll finish that later. Those are three things that we must do, folks. Must.
Congressman Kine.
Thank you for that question. It's an important question, one that deserves an honest answer. We do need a comprehensive immigration reform policy, and it's long overdue. Just at the very least, to bring more economic certainty to get this economy back working again. But I agree. We need to secure the borders. We need to enforce the laws. We need to do a better job of being able to track people who do come into this country, even legally, and have when their visas expire. But we also need to crack down and enforce the laws that are in place against unscrupulous employers that are hiring undocumented workers for their own purposes, but also establishing a database that they can go to and cross-reference workers who are applying for a job to make sure that they are there legal. But the idea that we've got 14 million undocumented workers, that we're somehow going to create a whole new police state to identify and round up and to ship out, is a figment of everyone's imagination. Unfortunately, Dan's party has run for the hills on this and has demagogued on this issue when virtually any reasonable person looking at it understands the roadmap of where we need to ultimately go. And that includes having those undocumented workers go to the end of the line, pay a fine for violating our laws, take the citizenship test, learn English as a language in this country, and then have a pathway then at that point, but only after those prerequisites and requirements are first met. That was something that I think President Bush was trying to provide leadership on, but he had no support within his own party. And you see this internal civil war taking place right now in the Republican Party. We're doing everything they can to demagogue on this issue, scare people about the issue, but not offering real solutions to the issue.
Okay, thank you. Mike?
Absolutely not. Federal government should not make a pathway for these people to come in. They have hopped our border in violation of our laws. They have shirked law coming up to places like Wisconsin and Minnesota. They have stolen constituents' identity, Americans' identity, and they've taken our jobs. Absolutely not. We should not be rewarding that kind of behavior. What that does is it invites other people to come in. You open up a free buffet, your trays are going to be gone, folks, in no time flat. We saw it with Cash for Clunkers. Absolutely not. There should be no pathway. We need to control the border. Drug cartels are up in the hills controlling big areas of U.S. soil. That's U.S. sovereign soil. We need to get that back. The immigration control, they can't go up there if they're not willing for a firefight. So, yes, it does happen. It is happening. We need to build a physical barrier. We need to put in sensors to monitor it. We need to staff it with enough border patrol to be effective. We need to invoke harsh penalties for employers who hire illegal aliens. We need to support laws like what's happening in Arizona. And, yes, it is practical to round these people up, Ron. It is practical. We've done it before, four times in U.S. history. We need to round them up, and we need to take them back home, and then we need to build their countries for the deportation.
Thanks, Mike.